Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. And I'm sure you must have heard on a Monday morning just before 6 o'clock our birding program called the Dawn Chorus, where we feature a bird every morning. And we know, as everybody knows, that South Africans are pretty well obsessed with birds. There are many, many birders here in South Africa. One of them is in the studio with me. His name is Mike Buckham, and one of his claims to fame is that he's the chairman of the Cape Bird Club, which recently, last year in fact, celebrated its 75th anniversary. So I want to find out from Mike about the Cape Bird Club and just what it is about birding that fascinates him so much. Because, first of all, welcome, Mike. Welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to talk about birds.
And you, as you said to me just now, you're not a full-time birder. You actually have a job, a day job.
That's correct. I'm a chartered accountant by training, and I've been working in the financial services industry for probably 25 to 28 years. And I don't think it's as exciting as birding, but it pays the bills, and I do enjoy the work. So.
But it says here as well that you were at the age of six, some 30 years or more ago, that you first, your passion came to life. What were you doing? How did that happen?
Very kind of you to say that was 30 years ago. It was more like 45 years ago. So my birding journey started when I was about 5 years old. My parents, we grew up in Joburg. Well, I grew up in Joburg, and my parents were true city slickers, no sense of the bush. And I was invited to go to the Kruger Park with a good friend of mine as a five-year-old. Mm-hmm. Went to the Kruger Park, absolutely loved it, came home and said to my parents, we have to go to the game reserve. Being city slickers, they wanted something a little bit more upmarket, so we went to a private game reserve called Londolozi. Back in those isolation days, they weren't quite as expensive as they
yes,
are today.
Yes, indeed.
Nowadays, you need to mortgage your house to go to a place like Londolozi.
Unbelievable, actually.
Very expensive. Yeah. So at the age of six, we went, our whole family, I've got an older brother, and we arrived at Londolozi, and we were allocated a wonderful guide by the name of Ian Thomas. And he was referred to as Inky Thomas. And he was a leopard specialist, but he was also a birder. And we got into the game drive vehicle, and we drove around, and he started pointing out birds as well as all the animals that
just
we saw.
By coincidence?
Yes, I think he had a family from Joburg and was interested to show us birds that we might think was a nice thing to see, and
rather than the big sort of game thing.
Yeah, and I think in game reserve sometimes you don't see the big game all the time, and rather fill the spaces with something that might be of interest. And he noticed that I was showing some interest, and I would engage with him, and he would say to me, okay, what is that? And I'd say, well, you said it was a yellow-billed hornbill, so there's a yellow-billed hornbill. So at the end of the game drive, he gave me his bird book, and he said to me, take this bird book and go through it, and if you can name 20 bird species on our afternoon game drive, I will let you drive the game drive vehicle.
And now you were six?
Six-year-old. Okay. So obviously I wouldn't be shifting gears. I'd be sitting on his lap and
steering
the wheel. And so while my parents were having their siesta, I was furiously going through the bird book, and we went on the game drive in the afternoon. And as we were driving, I started naming birds that I'd learnt. Obviously not that many because it's a six-year-old, but, you know, six-year-olds are more sponge-like than 50-year-olds.
Yes.
And so he would say, yes, you're right, and yes, you're right. And by the end of the game drive, I'd named 25 or so birds. And we went onto the airstrip, and where I couldn't hit anything. And I sat on his lap, and I steered the game drive vehicle down the runway. But I've said this quite a lot to people I tell the story to, is that the excitement of the birds was a lot better than sitting and driving the game drive vehicle.
Oh,
I'm not a petrol head,
yes.
So I was far more excited by the birds that we were seeing.
Yeah.
And actually, it's interesting. We got back to Johannesburg, and the first place we went was to the CNA. CNA still exists nowadays, but then it was the premium bookshop, and my parents bought me Birds of the Kruger National Park, written by Ken Newman. And subsequent years, I met Ken Newman, and he signed my copy. And I would get into bed every night, and I'd page through the books. He later launched a book called Birds of Southern Africa. And generally, when I was seeing new birds, I'd already seen them in the book because I was going through this book so voraciously every
Yeah, this was
nights.
The book that was lent to you by the other chap.
It was the same book, but I now
oh, you had, now you heard
I
your
had
copy.
My own copy.
Right. Okay, Mike, let's have a music break, and I see your first piece is by Queen.
That's right, and I don't have any birding connection to many of these songs. I think there might be one, but I chose Radio Gaga as my first song. Queen is amazing, and Freddie Mercury is probably the greatest vocalist of all time. And I've been to many Queen shows, I've seen the movie, and I've watched footage of his amazing concerts, and his vocal ability is incredible. So there were just so many Queen songs to choose from, and Bohemian Rhapsody is obviously the quintessential one.
Yeah.
I don't think the show's got enough time for the length of that song.
That's the problem with that song, yeah.
So, and I wanted to do something different, and Radio Gaga is just an absolutely incredible song, and so that was my first pick.
We miss you when we grow tired.
That's something we don't hear a lot of on Fine Music Radio. Freddie Mercury and Queen with one of their almost anthem songs, Radio Gaga. And it was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, whose name is Mike Buckham. And he is a bird. He's passionate about birding, as you've been hearing. And there's so much more to find out. You mentioned, I just want to go back a bit to see how you developed this passion, because here you were at the age of six, learning and getting this book and driving the thing down the runway and getting so excited about it all. But then what happened after that as you were going through school? What did it then remain an integral part of your life?
Yeah, so school days, I guess back in those days, birding wasn't as cool as it has become today, I think.
It's very cool, to use your word, isn't it? I mean, it is hugely popular, isn't
it? It's become enormously popular, and it's mm-hmm. become much more mainstream, and I think people are realizing how enjoyable it can be.
Yeah.
And also for younger people. So we love seeing kids out in the field. Back in those days, when I was at school, I was probably one of two or three birders at school. And when I was in primary school, I became very good friends with a guy by the name of Rael Loon, whose parents owned a share in Sabi Sabi Game Reserve. And he was a keen birder. Mm-hmm. And we used to do these birding big days. There still are birding big days, and they've become much more popular nowadays. And we used to start at Delta Park in Johannesburg, which is a suburban park. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Lockwood, a very famous birder, he actually lives in Delta Park, and we'd occasionally bump into him. And we'd start at 6 o'clock in the morning. Parents would drop us off. Back in those days, your parents could drop you off and feel that you'd be still alive at the end of the day. And we would be left to walk around Delta Park, along the river, at the various pans, under the woodland, and record bird species. And he and I were very close friends, and we did our birding together, and the passion grew. And I think it always helps to have someone alongside you.
Of course.
And in addition to that, my parents fueled my passion. My father, my parents are both still alive, and very grateful for that. And my father was also taken by birding, not quite as strongly as I was, but it allowed me to convince my parents that birding destinations on holiday were a nice choice. So we visited all corners of the country. Mm-hmm. My poor brother was dragged along. He wasn't a birder at all. And my mother wasn't really a birder, but she also got dragged along. And we used to go to lots of different places. And the great thing about birding is that birds are, you get many very generalist birds, but a lot of birds you can only see in certain places. And so it encouraged us to visit all corners of South Africa and Southern Africa. So we visited Namibia. We visited Northern KZN many times to the Kruger Park. We visited the Eastern Cape.
Is the Kruger Park good for birds?
Very good,
by the way.
Yeah, it's very good for birds. I mean, it's a very large area. It spans lots of different habitat types. And we would go to these weekends. There would be these honorary ranger weekends up at Punta Maria, which is the best area in Kruger for birding. And there'd be a whole lot
that
of...
That is quite high.
It's
quite far north.
It's right in the north. And there would be a big gathering of 50, 60 birders there for the weekend to see how many birds they could see. And I was always very encouraged when, you know, I found a good bird at one picnic site. I'll never forget finding a white-backed night heron, which is a really exciting bird. And everyone gathering around, and here's this little 10-year-old who's found this really cool bird. So it's, I think that's kind of how the passion developed. I'm very grateful to my parents for allowing our family holidays to be influenced in that direction, because birding, the more you see, the more you want to see. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an element of listing. So I had my Newman's Birds of Southern Africa. And in those days, there weren't listing apps. There weren't Excel spreadsheets. And so my Newman's Birds of Southern Africa was taken everywhere. The covers had fallen off long ago. I've still got the copy on my bookshelf. And every time I saw a new bird for my list, I would tick it in the book. So there'd be the little pen tick, and it would have a little inscription of where we were and the date on which we saw it. And I spent my life just ticking my book and coming back and wishing that we'd seen this one. Why didn't I see this one?
Oh.
So it's a little bit of a stamp collecting type of
thing. That's a good analogy, a stamp collecting. But the interesting thing with birding is that, this might be a very naive thing to say, I'm about to ruin my reputation. You know, you can't keep the bird. You know, stamps you collect.
Yes.
When you're a birder, you're not a collector. You look at.
Observer.
You're an observer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we're going to have another piece of music now.
Fantastic.
Mike, and what is this now? Red Hot Chili Peppers.
So I know this is Fine Music Radio, but we're throwing in some rock songs.
Yes.
So this one is a song that was released in the early 1990s, I think. And it was around about the time I turned 21. And I celebrated my 21st, as everyone tends to do, at a nice party. Mm-hmm. And I wanted a theme song for my 21st. And this song was a very popular song at the time, and it was one of my favorites, Under the Bridge by Red Hot Chili Peppers. So it was a theme song back then, and we were listening to this song in the car yesterday with my kids, and they were very, I think, impressed that their old man liked such a vibey song.
Okay, let's listen.
I don't ever wanna feel
Yes, you are indeed tuned to Fine Music Radio, some rock music which we don't normally play, but we do break rules in People of Note to make our guests feel at home. And Mike Buckham is my guest today. He's a birder. And that song, Under the Bridge, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Mike, just before the music, you mentioned the Cape Bird Club. And it was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, the Cape Bird Club. Because last year, apparently, you celebrated your 75th anniversary. I mean, the title sounds pretty obvious, but what is the Cape Bird Club?
The Cape Bird Club is a membership organization.
You're the chairman, aren't you?
I'm the chairperson. Been the chairperson for just over 2 years. I've been on the committee for, sure, I don't even know how long, but maybe about 8 years. It's a, as I said, a membership organization. We've got about 600 members. It's the second largest club in South Africa. The Witzburg Club is slightly bigger than ours. No, I lie. It is the biggest club. We are the second oldest club.
Oh, at 75 years, yes. My goodness.
So the Witzburg Club, I think, was formed literally months before us. So we're a bit sad about that because then we could be the biggest and the oldest. We're an affiliate bird club to BirdLife South Africa, which is it's a conservation organization, very well run, very impressive organization, does a lot of very good work. And we down in the Cape provide a whole lot of birding resources and activities for birders in Cape Town. And so we have monthly meetings, we have an Instagram account, we have a Facebook page, we've got weekday outings, we've got weekend outings, and we've got a wonderful magazine called Promerops. Promerops is the scientific family name for a bird called a sugar bird, which is an endemic bird. It's our emblem is the Cape sugar bird. And yes, we celebrated our 75th anniversary last year, and I wanted, as the chairperson, I wanted to do something that was a little different. We celebrated with a wonderful gala event at Kirstenbosch with 220 people. We had a wonderful guest speaker, Michaela Strachan, who's a very well-known BBC presenter, and we did birthday cakes and what have you, but I wanted to do something which was a little bit more out in the field and activity-based. So we launched what we called the Cape Bird Club, City of Cape Town, Birding Big Year. So a good friend of mine works for the city in biodiversity management, and the two of us had an innocuous coffee one morning and decided we would do a birding challenge that ran from the 1st of January to the 31st of December, and the goal would be for birders to see as many bird species as they could within that calendar year within the boundaries of the City of Cape Town. And the boundaries run roughly from just, I think, south of Azefontein, across Marmre, Malmesbury, just west of Stellenbosch, includes Gordon's Bay, down a little bit along Clarence Drive, and then back along False Bay and Cape
Point. Oh, so it's a big area.
It's a big area, and that was what was so appealing. It's a big enough area that there were lots of birds to be seen, but not too big that we weren't burning too much carbon racing around the countryside to try and see birds.
Yeah.
And we started a WhatsApp group, and it actually just took off enormously. So we had over 300 people that participated. You probably wouldn't have a good feel for the number of species that you'd expect, but you might be surprised. We recorded 324 bird species within the boundaries of the City of Cape Town.
That does surprise me. It's a big number, yes.
We expected, and bear in mind, I've been birding in Cape Town for 35 years. I sort of expected we might get between 280 and maybe 300. So 324 was extraordinary. Mm. So there was a winner in terms of pure number, which was Trevor Hardacre. He's one of the very well-known birders in the country. He recorded 314 bird species, and I like to tease him about the 10 that he didn't see. But it was an amazing event, and it highlighted the number of birds we have in the City of Cape Town, and it created a real community, and the WhatsApp group has continued this year, and we've had a lot of fun with it, and we found birds we never expected to find. We've had rediscoveries of birds that we thought were lost. I actually was lucky enough to go running on the mountain in Newlands Forest and came across a bird called an Eisner Warbler, which is an endemic bird. An endemic bird is a bird that only occurs within a certain geographic area, so it's a South African endemic bird species. The last one had been recorded about 5 years before, and we genuinely thought we had lost an Eisner Warbler to the City of Cape Town. It's common on the Southern Cape coast, but there was always a stronghold in on the eastern slopes of Table Mountain. 5 years disappeared, and I was running on the path, and I heard one calling, and I could use some expletives, but I won't. But very
you thought,
exciting.
My goodness.
And so it was a wonderful rediscovery of a bird that we thought we had lost.
Oh, lovely story. Yeah. How many members are there in the Cape Bird Club?
About 600.
Oh, so it's quite,
it's quite a big organization, yeah.
And pretty well all ages? Are younger people interested?
It's been, I think bird clubs have had a generally older demographic. But we've spent a lot of time, and one of my colleagues on the Bird Club committee, a lady by the name of Penny, she does incredible work in encouraging young birders. So we've got a young birders WhatsApp group as well, and we've probably got 30 to 40 birders under the age of 18 that are now active in the club, and she runs specific outings for the young birders. And we had, in amongst that group of 30 to 40, we had many of them performing very well. So we had a young woman, she's 16, Zoe. She came seventh in the challenge, and she pipped me by one spot, which I was visibly annoyed about, but actually internally very happy. So it's great that we've got these young birders who are
and
are
also male female, a nice mix of male.
Yes, very much so. Okay. I think one would expect birding is probably a bit more male dominated, but the bird club has got, we've got lots of couples who are part of the bird club, and they become such familiar faces, and it's we're trying to span the demographic, because I think the future is in the younger birders, and so it's been a lovely journey with the Cape Bird Club.
Do you look for members for the Cape Bird Club
all the time? I think the main reason for that is because the subs go into the Cape Bird Club's coffers, and we spend a lot of money on donating to conservation efforts. So I'll talk just about the one, which is we pay for trackers for a bird called a black harrier, which is an endemic raptor, and it's on the verge of becoming critically endangered because of wind turbines. And so we learn a lot from, they're very mobile birds. They breed and then they go all over the country, literally all over the country. The birds that we track from Rufiisona end up in Namibia or in Gauteng. That's how far they wander. And so at the Cape Bird Club, we've spent money on two trackers. They're 25,000 rand each.
Oh, wow.
So the more members we have, the more conservation.
Well, towards the end of the program, I want to ask you how people get hold of you, and you mentioned your Instagram and all that. So we'll talk about that towards the end. But now, your next piece of music, Pink Floyd and one of their iconic albums, Wish You Were Here, After the Dark Side of the Moon.
So when I was a kid, actually a 16-year-old, I think it was a cool thing to watch Another Brick on the Wall.
Yes.
Another Brick in the Wall.
Yes.
Might be wrong. And so I had an affinity towards Pink Floyd, but I hadn't listened to Pink Floyd for many years. And actually on a birding trip with a very good birding friend of mine, his WhatsApp icon is the prism.
Oh,
the Dark Side of the Moon. And so I got talking to him about it, and I said, you know, Dean, why have you got the prism? And Pink Floyd is his favorite band of all time. Roger Waters, he thinks is a genius, which he obviously is. And I started to listen to a little bit of Pink Floyd again. And Wish You Were Here, it's just a very, very, it's a very powerful song. And I, once again, my kids were very appreciative of their father's music interest. So Wish You Were Here is my third song.
So you think you could tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you think you can tell? Did they get you to train? the same old ground. What have we found? Same old fears. Wish you were here.
That is quite a famous song, Wish You Were Here, the title track of an album by Pink Floyd. And it was the third choice of my guest on People of Note this week, where, although we're hearing some rock music, we're talking a lot about birds. And his name is Mike Buckham, who is, not for, apart from anything else, the chairman of the Cape Bird Club, and as you hear, is pretty passionate about birds. And you mentioned around South Africa, but you also mentioned to me, Mike, that you go overseas. You've done birding overseas internationally. Why?
So I've been birding since I was 6 years old, as I mentioned earlier, and over that span of time, I've had an opportunity to visit most corners of our listing area, our sub-region listing area, which includes our neighboring countries. And the potential list is just under 1,000 species. And my list is just slowing down. You know, it's the laws of diminishing returns
yes.
apply more to birding than to economics, I think.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the more you see, the harder it is to see new stuff.
Right.
And so I think one naturally just wants to continue engaging with things that you haven't experienced before. And so I had an opportunity, my first proper international birding trip was, I think, in 2016. A friend of mine said to me, why don't we do a trip overseas? Let's go to the near tropics. So the near tropics are sort of South and Central America. And his destination that he suggested was Panama. And so one thinks of, you know, Brazil and Peru and Argentina and even Costa Rica, but one doesn't think of Panama. But he had found a nice guiding company called the Canopy Family. They own a few lodges in Panama, and he suggested we go there. And I didn't realize I was being swindled at the time,
because
he is a well-traveled birder. His name's Simon, and he had a single bird in his life that he wanted to see, which was a harpy eagle. So it's one of the most difficult to find raptors. It's iconic. It's the largest raptor on the planet. It stands over a meter high. It's got talons the size of your hands.
Good grief.
It eats monkeys and sloths. and it's very hard to find because it lives in rainforests. So he knew that the Canopy family were good at finding harpy eagles. And it just so happened that they had discovered a nest through a farmer who was a subsistence farmer in an area called the Darien, which is in eastern Panama near the Colombian border. None of this I knew at the time when he suggested Panama, but I was up for anything. I wanted to see different birds. And so the neotropics are very different to Africa. There's a whole bunch of new families that we don't get in Africa. So the toucans, hummingbirds, jacamars, puffbirds, tanagers, all these fantastical birds, lots of amazing colors.
None of which you'd seen before, obviously.
None of which I'd seen before. So off we went, and we spent 2 weeks in Panama, split between a lodge near the Panama Canal And then we went into western Panama, into the highlands, and then we spent a week in the Darien, which is in the lowlands, which is much more like the Colombian rainforests. Right. And it's an interesting area because there's a highway that goes through from Alaska down to Tierra del Fuego, but it's broken in the middle. It's called the Darien Gap. And the road ends in a little town called Yavisa in Panama, and then it starts again somewhere in Colombia. And there's a gap of, I don't know, 200 kilometers because the terrain is so difficult. So that's the wild country that you're dealing with. And we spent a week there, and we spent a day going to see this harpy eagle on its nest, which involved a 1.5 hour drive in a car and then a 3.5 hour trip on a boat through channels on a wonderful river through rainforest, and then an 1.5 hour hike to get to this nest that this farmer had found. And nothing's guaranteed in birding. So even though there's a nest with a chick on the nest, both adults could be away hunting. And we arrived at the nest, and the farmer, who couldn't speak any English but was, you know, earning a few US dollars, showing people his harpy eagle. And we looked through the gap in the trees, and a female harpy eagle was on the nest with the chick. And then probably half an hour later, we heard the male calling, and it arrived on the nest with prey and started feeding the chick right in front of us. It was quite an incredible
experience.
It was a bucket list experience. And yeah. I wasn't really caring whether I saw a harpy eagle before the trip, but having seen it, there was a guy on our trip with us who, even more so than Simon, wanted to see a harpy eagle. And he found out about this nest, and he booked the trip immediately. And I've got a lovely little video clip where I interview him before we get on the boat. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, what are you going to do with your life if you see this bird? His ringtone on his phone was the call of a harpy eagle. So wow. That's how passionate birders can be about things. And he saw this harpy eagle and he had tears in his eyes. It was an amazing experience.
Oh, gosh.
So that was my first international birding trip. We saw about 350 bird species.
And have you got a photograph of this harpy eagle?
I do have a photograph of, okay, and it's on my Instagram account.
Okay. So if anyone wants to see it. I forget to ask you about the tag and all that.
Yes.
But, Mike, and so just very briefly, have you been elsewhere in the world?
Yes.
Briefly.
So I did a trip to Peru with a good friend of mine. We spent 3 weeks in Peru and we saw 650 bird species.
My goodness.
With some of the rarest birds in the world on that trip. And the trips that I love the most, and I haven't even spoken about my family, so I'm going to get moaned at by my wife.
I'm going to ask you about your family just
but
now.
We did a trip in, I think, 2 years ago now. We spent 2.5 weeks in Brazil. We flew to Sao Paulo and we rented a car, and we drove around Brazil. And my one son is a very keen birder. And we saw lots of bird species. So maybe we can save the family talk to the next segment, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. As we approach the end of the program, by the way, U2 is up next on your music list, I see.
That's correct. So this is probably a song that not many people know. There are the iconic U2 songs, With or Without You, Where the Streets Have No Name, Joshua Tree. That Joshua Tree album was what catapulted U2. And I became a passionate U2 listener. Also back in school days, maybe in my university days. And every single time an album was launched, I would buy the album. And my wife was telling the kids the other day that you used to actually have CDs.
Yeah. So yeah,
I had a CD collection. I probably have 15 U2 albums in CD form.
Wow.
And I don't even know which album the song comes from, but it's one of the more recent albums. And the song's called Landlady. And it's, I'm sure, not that well known, but it really is a wonderful song. We had a big debate once again in the car because my son likes another U2 song better than this one. And eventually I said to him, listen, this is what I'm picking, and that's the end of the story. So Landlady by U2 is my fourth song.
Roar, the phone is where I live till I get home. Doorbell rings, you tell me that I have a key. I ask you how you know it's me. The road, no road without a turn. And if there was, the road would be too long. keeps standing in this view is the view that we can be brand new. The landlady takes me up in the air. I go where I would not dare. Meant. 'Cause when I was broke, it was you that always paid the rent.
That's the group U2, and as you said, Mike, one of their lesser-known songs, Landlady. Mike Buckham is my guest on People of Note. And just as we head towards the end of the program, the one thing I want to ask you, and I'm going to put it this way, how does your family put up with you? I mean, you mentioned your son being a birder, but your wife must have to be very patient as well with all your comings and goings and your passion.
Absolutely. We met in 1995, and I don't think Jean knew that I was a birder back then. Otherwise, we might not have had a second date. But, you know, from fairly early on, we went away for a weekend once, and we had this amazing sighting of a black harrier in the Swartland. And I think she realized that I was a very keen birder then. And she hasn't ever tried to change me. She accepts me for who I am.
Good for her.
And so we've got four children. So my oldest is Thomas. He's 20. And then Adam is 18. Jack is 16. And Emma's 12. So she got a little girl right at the end. And what happened was my oldest son, Thomas, when he was about six, started coming out into the field with me, because you do know that when you take a kid birding, you're actually babysitting. So the pink tickets are hard to come by. So if you say you're going to babysit your child, it's easier to sell it. And Thomas was a very keen companion of mine. And it started to wane when he was sort of midway through through his school years. So as he started high school, he started to lose a bit of interest. And I think that's natural. And I never wanted to force him. So if he chose not to come out with me, I said, fine. And then my second son, Adam, he also picked it up around about when he was seven. And he's become as fanatical a birder as I am.
Really?
So Jack and Emma still haven't, but the bug hasn't bitten with them. And I think it might be too late for them. But Adam is a very keen birding companion of mine. He's just started at Stellenbosch University, so he's not around. So I have to find other birding friends to go out with, which is not that hard. But it is a very special relationship to have a son that is
very keen
birder.
And your wife's patiently at home putting up with you and Adam's fanaticism.
Absolutely. And I mentioned the Brazil trip, and I'll maybe just mention it again. And it works very well because we can go out early in the morning and we can go and see the birds that we want to see, and then we can do family stuff during the day. And so a lot of our trips are like that, where we go to very nice places where the family is happy. Sometimes there's a spot that we go to that maybe is not so good for many things other than birding, and we visited a reserve in Brazil. We spent three nights at a place which Jean did question whether birding was the only thing on my mind when I booked it. but I've got a very patient family, and I've been very fortunate because.
What about your job, Mike? You are in a job that's fairly high profile, this financial world. Do they don't mind you going off into
the
bush? I accumulate leave.
I did have a very stressful job till about 2018, and that was I had a very large gap in my access to good birding in terms of time. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of took a step back, and so my work over the last sort of 4 or 5 years has been a little bit lower key. I consulted for a while, and now I'm working relatively permanently. I say relatively permanently. I do have quite a bit of flexibility.
Right,
But generally, my birding trips are, you know, the standard, you know, accumulate leave, and that's why you've got to combine family holidays with birding holidays. So I've been fortunate to go on a few specific birding trips, but most of our birding is through holidays. Most of my birding is through holidays with the family, where I swindle them a little bit and I tell them about these amazing places we can go.
And they just fall for you.
They do fall for me, yeah.
Mike, just before we end, and I know this is potentially a big subject, but I'm sorry I'm asking it so late, but when I lie in bed in the morning and hear the birds outside my apartment, I often wonder, you know, we love the sound of birds, and our morning thing, the dawn chorus, fascinates people. So this is my naive question. Why do birds sing, and their songs are so different?
So birds have got different vocalizations for different reasons. Sometimes it's to attract a mate. In many cases, birds' song is to attract a mate. Other cases, contact calls to tell birds, other birds, that here I am. And then there's obviously for warnings. So some birds use bird calls to warn of predators. Mm-hmm. And birds call to alert their young that they're on their way with food. And I'm pleased you mentioned bird song, because it's one of my favorite things about birding. I fortunately still have good ears. My eyes are starting to fail a bit.
Oh.
But not in a bad way, but I don't see as much as my son does. But I love bird song, and I think it's a step up from just seeing birds and identifying them by sight. Mm-hmm. Is being able to identify birds by call, and You see so many more birds when you can hear them and when you can identify them by call, because you can track them down. And if you know calls, it makes it a far easier task to find, particularly the very hard to find birds.
And the one thing I think everybody likes, even if they're not birders, certainly if they're not birders, is the sound of birdsong.
Absolutely.
And that's why we have this feature on a Monday morning called the Dawn Chorus, where we hear a bird every morning. But we're going to have to end now, Mike.
That's a pity.
Don't. Well, yes, I know. But such is time in radio. So thanks for a fascinating conversation, by
the
way.
It's a pleasure.
And
thanks for having me.
Your last piece of music, Coldplay.
So this particular song sticks with me because I was watching a Graham Norton show, and Chris Martin was a guest on the Graham Norton show. And when you have a musical guest, you get asked to perform.
Yeah.
And they cut to the stage, and it was a piano on stage that had been set up with probably 1,000 candles. And they turned all the lights off, and Chris Martin sat at the piano with all these candles and played the song Everglow. And not only is it the most incredible song, It's also always reminds me of that amazing set where you had all these candles. My children told me the song's too slow, but I think it's a great way to finish because it's such a beautiful song, and it's just Chris Martin playing the piano.
Thank you, and my guest has been Mike Buckham. And before you go, tell us how people can contact you through your Instagram and if they want to find out more about the Cape Bird Club.
So we've got a wonderful website. The Cape Bird Club's got a very informative website, so www.capebirdclub.co.za. But if you just search it, you'll find it. And then my Instagram handle is at Buckham Birding, one word. So Buckham, BuckhamBirding. And my son has an Instagram handle as well, which is at Better Buckham Birding. So,
cheeky.
So you'll probably find both of us there, and okay. A follow would be great. I post all my favorite bird photos on my Instagram
page. Well, there's something to look for as we end with Everglow. Thanks, Mike.
Like brothers in blood, or sisters who ride, yeah, we swore on that night we'd be friends till we died. But the changing of winds and the way waters flow, life is short as the falling of snow. And I'm gonna miss you, I know. But when I'm cold, cold in what I'm wrong, so I know you're always with me, and the way you will show, and you're with me wherever I go. Ever glow.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.